All right, everybody. Time for another Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm here with John Barbin, and we're going to talk about some really fun stuff today. Just in the forums and things like that, we get lots of questions all the time. And one of the things that seems to come up is something about strength and how strong this particular body type is and things like that. And what John and I have talked about in the past and Pilon is that we really don't think people understand that an Adonis body actually is a very strong body as well. So it's not like you're going to be, lifting peon weights and stuff like that. I mean, you're actually pretty tough looking. So, John, kind of give some background into that and talk about that just a little bit.
Well, yeah, people keep asking is it just for looks or am I actually going to be strong? And it's kind of impossible to be big without being strong or to build muscle without building strength along with it. If anything, strength comes, you can actually build more strength or at least see more gains in strength than you will in actual muscle size. It's almost like strength precedes size to some degree. I don't think you can just all of a sudden be big and be really weak. So there shouldn't, I'm surprised anyone even actually thinks that one happens without the other. Scientifically, muscle's always correlated to the strength of a muscle is directly correlated to its cross-sectional size. So, however, a bigger muscle is always a stronger muscle. Now, but strength is exercise specific. So, if I'm doing let's say flat barbell bench presses, and I'm doing them for sets of 10, and I do that a lot, a couple times a week, and I'm doing that for months and months, I'll get strong at flat barbell bench presses in around the 10 rep range. That doesn't necessarily mean I'll get stronger at barbell bench presses around the 1 or 2 rep range, and it doesn't mean that I'll get that much stronger at even dumbbell bench presses or incline bench presses. It means I'm getting stronger just at the exercise I'm doing. So that's where I guess a bit of the confusion comes in, because people just don't realize that it's that specific. Strength is exercise specific and rep range specific. So even though the muscle is getting bigger and you are getting stronger overall, and if you went and picked up and did a different exercise, you're still going to be stronger, but not as measurably stronger as you would be on the one exercise you're doing. So you build strength is really that specific, and I don't know if people really necessarily realize how specific it gets.
Right. So I guess what you're saying is, let's say I start out and I'm dumbbell pressing 30-pound dumbbells on an incline. So incline dumbbell press at 30, and then say I'm doing
how many?
135 with a barbell. If I just stick to barbell, my barbell gains will outgain my dumbbell gains by a couple of factors, I would imagine, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and rep ranges too, right? So if you're doing incline dumbbell press with 30-pound dumbbells for reps of 12, and you do a lot of that, you'll actually start to get stronger in the 12 rep range, but it's not necessarily going to affect your 3 to 5 rep range, your maximum strength. It'll reflect on your 12 rep strength. Yeah. And same with the barbells. They're not necessarily all that transferable. If anything, the thing that's most transferable is the strength in the rep range. So if you're doing if you're doing 12s with a bar, 12 rep sets with the bar and 12 rep sets with dumbbells, that's more you'll kind of notice the transfer, but only in that rep range. So because I trained with a powerlifting team for a long time, and it doesn't matter how strong you get with lighter weights. For powerlifting, it matters how strong you get with the heaviest weights. So to compete, they're lifting their heaviest one rep weight. They're lifting it once. But to make that number go up, so let's say my maximum bench press, or let's just pick a number. Let's say it's 300 pounds. And let's say I'm trying to train for a competition 6 months from now, and I'm hoping to get that number up as high as I can. Well, for me to get that number to go, that one rep from 300 to go up to, let's say I want 320 or 330, I have to train in the very lowest rep ranges. I have to train 2 reps, 3 reps heavy. The lightest I would even be training is 5 reps, which for most people, that's already heavier than they ever would even bother trying to train. But in this specific case, I'm trying to make my 1 rep max heavier, not my 12 rep max. So if I was just doing bench presses with 12 reps, that wouldn't change my one rep max at all. Like 6 months later, I'd still only be able to do 300 pounds. So I would get stronger at 12 reps, but I wouldn't get any stronger at all at one rep. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hold on just a second. So tell me this. Does that kind of what does that do to some of the equations that are out there as far as, you know, estimating one rep max and things like that? I mean, obviously they're estimations, but I mean, how much of an estimation is it really?
They're not.
Or how much truth is it?
They're not bad. I mean, there's three or four different calculators out there that add in various factors for, like if you can do 100 pounds 12 times on bench press, and then you plug it into two or three of these different calculators, you end up with, you know, it estimates your one rep max would be, you know, 100 and whatever, 30 or 140. And I've actually cross-referenced those numbers with a lot of elite-level powerlifters that I've trained with, and these guys routinely rank in the top 10 in the world, so I mean, there's really nowhere else to go to look. I mean, that's a very good cross-section of people to actually be cross-referencing these numbers with. And those calculators actually come out pretty accurate for what those guys can lift. So I would say more or less those calculators are, you know, they're with the whatever error range they have, the average person does not need to worry about it at all because no one's using them to calculate. No one's going to a world championship and going to miss the number that they're trying to hit, but just because of one of these calculators. And anyone who actually does those, that type of competition would never rely on a calculator. They would actually go with what they can actually do in the gym. So the bottom line is those calculators are pretty accurate because I've cross-referenced with people who do train in the heaviest rep ranges. Now it seems to work backwards, but not necessarily forwards. So meaning if you can calculating up from multiple reps to what you can lift for one rep seems to have a little bit more error than calculating backwards from being able to lift. So if I know I physically can lift 300 pounds and I've done it before, and then the calculator, if you plug that into the calculator, then it says, well, I should be able to do 200 pounds for 12 reps. Usually when you go backwards, it seems to work, but it doesn't. There's more error when you work your way from the lighter weight up. So if I actually can do 200 pounds for 12 reps, I still may not necessarily, even if the calculator says so, I still may not necessarily be able to handle 300 pounds for one. But if I physically have actually done 300 pounds for one and the calculator says I should be able to do 200 pounds for 12, I almost always can. Hmm. See what I mean? So someone who actually has worked their way up to that maximum single rep strength, the calculator seems to even be more accurate working your way back down to what he probably could do for 12 reps.
Hmm. So, I mean, would that say that that your lower rep ranges actually kind of like if you go into sprinting, I guess, if we're going to make a cardio correlation, that working heavier is going to help increase your muscle endurance a little bit, but working on your muscular endurance isn't going to necessarily help you lift
your max,
more on the other end.
On the max end.
Right.
That it seems when you use the calculators to solve for these numbers, that seems to be the case. I don't know
right.
if it could just be an artifact of the type of person who trains for one reps maxes, has been training for a long time and lifts so heavy so often that they are getting some strength endurance out of it too. It's not like you're just, you know, when you're doing those kind of reverse calculations, normally you're dealing with someone who's been training really intensely for a long time anyways. It's not like we're taking a novice and who just tries one rep once and then they just work backwards. We're taking a guy who's probably done a lot of bench pressing for a long time. So it could literally just be an artifact of that guy having been well trained for a long time.
Okay. Interesting. So obviously training level is going to play a significant part into that. Well, let's think about this for a second because, you know, I'm always brainstorming and having a good time trying to think of not other metrics but other goals that, you know, people can realize. And we've kind of talked about this a little bit because I was trying to formulate something in my head, which you obviously kind of debunked really quickly, saying that lifts or strength is pretty exercise specific. But what would – if we could set thresholds or maybe, you know, poundages and things like that. I mean, obviously we'd have to somehow correlate for height and things like that. But I mean, how strong in certain lifts maybe say? I mean, like for yourself, I guess we could just start with you. I mean, you're about 6 foot tall. I mean, where are you right now on specific lifts? And then maybe between the both of us, you can say where you're at. I can say where I'm at. And that would maybe give people an idea of where they're probably going to be when they get close.
Okay. So, again, strength is exercise specific and rep range specific. So if we pull out a few of the exercises in the base Adonis index workout system, just so people can relate. I use for like incline dumbbell press, for example, I'll use between 90 and 100 pounds for 5 reps. So it kind of depends on how I feel on that day, but I can handle hundreds for about 5 reps. For seated shoulder press, for 5 reps, I could probably do 80s. I've kind of tweaked my shoulder. I used to be able to do 85s a couple months ago, but I had a shoulder problem I've been working around. So something like that. Trying to think of other weights to measure.
What rows?
About dumbbell rows, I usually use for like one arm dumbbell rows. I can for about 8 reps, I use about 110 pounds. If I have reps, I can do like 115s, sometimes 120s. But I can't really, without wrist wraps, I can't keep a 120-pound dumbbell in my hand. Like, it just kind of starts falling out. So, I think my back's stronger than my hands can handle. So, which I don't use wraps on purpose, so I can just, so my grip strength can come along. So I'd say I'm in around the 110-pound range on dumbbell rows, for about 8 reps. I could probably handle 120s for 5 reps, because I can keep the thing in my hand kind of for at least 5 reps. It kind of gets ugly towards the fourth and fifth rep as it's sort of sliding out of my fingers. So I mean, I guess is that good? I mean,
yeah, I guess.
Every now and then I sub in. Well, here's another one. Every now and then I sub in incline barbell press instead of dumbbell press, and I use, I don't know, around 200 for reps of 5. So I mean, if that gives people a rough idea. Now there's other lifts that I just haven't mentioned because I don't do them much, and so right now I wouldn't even know where they're at. Like for instance, flat barbell bench press, I don't really do it. I put it on the bar the other day with my training partner. She wanted to sub it in instead of some of the other pressing we did, and it's definitely nowhere near it used to be for me. So I mean, it, like 8 reps at 225 was, you know, way harder than it should have been. But that's, you know, that's the kind of the strength at my size can handle right now. When I was using flat bench press for regular workouts, I could do it for about, I don't know, 12, 13, 225 pounds. You know, if I was going heavier, I could get up to 250, 260, something like that for the 6 to 5, 5, 6, 7 rep range, something like that.
Right. Yeah. So that, see, that's funny because I'm right around there and pretty much all the same lifts. I go typically about around 100 for 5 for incline or incline, dumbbell presses. If I'm feeling really good, I can go 102, 5, and cause that's the highest the dumbbells go in the gym.
Yeah.
So, rows, I'm one at 102, 5 at like 8. And again, same thing with you, man. My grip strength just fails on me, so it's kind of a moot point, I guess you could say. Dumbbell presses, I go, God, I'm at 80s for 5. It's either 80s or 85s. I can't remember. This one of the two.
Shoulder dumbbell press, right? Seated?
Yeah, shoulder dumbbell presses. And the thing with that isn't necessarily the for me, because I don't work out with anybody. It's being able to kick it up to be able to get it up to where it needs to be.
Oh, from your knees to your shoulders, yeah.
Yeah, is more of a problem than anything. I don't, like I say, once it gets to that 80, like today I did shoulder presses and, you know, I did the biceps first, you know, that's prescribed in the program or whatever. And I mean, I was pretty gassed, so I could only handle, you know, the 70s. But that's just because that's all I could get up, you know, from just picking them up. It was a pain. So, but if I'm fresh, you know what I mean?
Yep.
That's typically where I'm at. Incline chest press it depends on the day. It's like what, between 205 for, about 6, sometimes 225 for like 3 or 4. I haven't worked. I'll tell you what's funny. I started working decline bench just for fun, and I noticed that the barbell exercise, I noticed that it takes me a couple of weeks to get used to the movement. Like there's a certain stretch or something like that, and so I'm a lot weaker than I, like you were saying, I'm a lot weaker than I should be. But within about two or three weeks, if I've been doing that same lift, my strength level in that particular lift will grow really quickly. So like I started out like 185 or something like that, just dumbbells, just because it was such real, just all, not dumbbells, but decline, just awkward. But now I'm up to, I think like 250 for five or something like that, 250, 260.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's so exercise specific. Like to go back to powerlifting as an analogy, those guys only measure three lifts: the bench press, the squat, and the deadlift. And most of our workouts are just those three lifts. We don't do a whole lot of other stuff during those workouts. So you're hitting that same exercise over and over and over again. And you said it. You have to. It's a groove. It's a specific movement pattern. It's no different than like shooting a free throw in basketball. You like have to zero in on that movement pattern and get good at that exact movement pattern. So, you know, when I was powerlifting with the team, you know, I was using significantly more weight on those exercises than I can handle right now. I was, you know, using 275 pounds on bench press for five sets of five reps, squatting probably in the 350 to 370 range for reps, 3 to 5 reps, deadlifting in the 450 to 475 range for 3 to 5 reps. And then the maxes, you know, go up from there. Now they don't go up higher, much higher from there because those were all like really low rep sets. I can't really go much higher than the sets I was training at. But I managed to deadlift 525 as my max. I think about 440 was my heaviest squat, and about 330 was my best bench. So nothing crazy, but you know it's all exercise specific. I couldn't hit any of those numbers right now because I'm not training those exact exercises in that exact rep range. So, but that's an idea of how the strength that you're trying to quantify or measure really has everything to do with the exact exercise you've been doing and in the rep range you've been doing it in and when you choose to test it and, you know, what rep range you're testing.
So if this is kind of a little bit different. So we've kind of already, I guess, threw it out there that, like I say, I mean, it's the body shape that you're going after is still pretty strong. So, I mean, if you're 6 foot tall, like we are, you're probably going to be looking, you know, roughly around, I mean, I would say, because we're all doing the same workouts, I mean, roughly within 10% maybe or something like that.
Of the numbers we just gave?
Yeah. You know, something like that, kind of the threat. If you're our size and you're doing our exact workout, roughly.
Yeah, I would say anybody who's 6 feet tall is, as they're approaching, because you and I are already – basically at the right shoulders, the right muscle mass size we kind of need. So you'd be pretty close to the sort of strength that we have. You may be stronger for sure.
Sure.
You may be getting to your ideal shoulder size, upper body size without quite getting to the strength that maybe we've mentioned, but you're not going to be far off. Like if I say I'm using 85s or Brad says he's using 85s and you know, you're looking and you're like, well, you know, you use about 75 for that particular lift. That you're going to be close. But if you're, you know, any of those lifts we just mentioned, if you're like, you know, magnitudes lower, like we're saying we're using 80s and you're kind of pushing 40s, you got a ways to go before you get there. Like it's, that, like when it's that much different, that's gonna also correlate into a difference in size for sure. Like I'm working with a guy right now who's, he's pretty lean, but he's got a bit to go to get to his ideal shoulder size. And he's 6'2", 6'2 and a half. And he's significantly behind me in some of these lifts as far as weight goes. And when he finally gets to his, you know, his, Adonis index shoulder size, he will have caught me for sure in those strength in the strength of those lifts before he gets his shoulders up to their potential. Just because there's so much more push in him and there's so much more growth potential in him, and he just hasn't been training properly yet for that type of shape and size. So now that I'm training with him, I'm going to get him away from doing. He's been doing more like kind of, I don't know, like cardio endurance style, like a little bit of cross training, but never really focusing on forcing those muscles to grow and adapt. So there's a lot left in him to progress along, because he's only using like maybe 60 pounds on incline dumbbell press, and that's clearly not enough. And shoulders, he can handle, you know, maybe 50-55s. So there's a lot left in him to get him up to full size.
Right. Yeah. And guys, this isn't one of those things where we're saying, you suck or whatever if you're not lifting that amount of weight or anything. Hey, it's just another measurement for you to kind of keep your eye on. If you really want to know what it's going to take to be where you want to be, you can basically look at your poundages right now. And like he was saying, because even though it is exercise specific and things like that, I mean, your muscle strength is going to be correlated to muscle size overall. So, I mean, it's kind of a good ballpark for you just to kind of give you an idea of where you want to be. So, anything else you want to talk about as far as strength or anything like that?
There's different things to consider with strength. There's levers. There's some people genetically are built in a way that a certain exercise just seems really easy for them. Brad Pilon's a good example. He's always been a really good bench presser. I don't know. I'm not really sure why. He just excels at that exercise and can always outlift me no matter how much I try to catch him. I can never really catch him. But on the other side, I'm always slightly stronger than him on shoulder press. So I think I'm just a shoulder dominant kind of bench presser and with shoulder exercises in general. So, that's something you'll notice. Everyone has some slight variation where they it's so slight. You can't really tell by looking at someone. But when you get training, you'll notice that some people are just stronger at certain exercises. And it could be the most minor change of the way your shoulders hang or the way a tendon inserts. It's something you couldn't really measure and wouldn't notice like visually. Like guys like Michael Jordan and Vince Carter who can jump like crazy, you look at them and you're like, well, they look kind of shaped like everyone else. Why is it? And then, you'll find out that they have like really, really genetically overdeveloped hip flexor muscles and stuff that you kind of wouldn't notice, or just the insertion of their tendons are slightly different, and it makes all the difference in the world for how much weight they can lift, or how much power they can generate at a certain joint. So there's little variations that aren't obvious to the naked eye that make big differences when you're training, and that kind of explains why certain people are stronger than others in certain lifts, but when you look at them, you just can't tell why they're so much stronger. Like one of the other guys I'm training, he's a really thick guy. He's like a lot of base muscle on him. But I'm always stronger than him in any kind of pull down lift for back. But he's immensely stronger than me in every other lift except that. He just can't catch me no matter what. But when you see him, he looks like an NFL like fullback. He's huge. But just that lift, for some reason, in that lift, when he puts his arms up to pull a weight down, something about the way his shoulders are shaped, he's just weak in that lift, and he just can't do it that well. And he's strong in other back lifts, like when he's doing a one-arm dumbbell row, he's strong, and low pulley rows, he's really strong. But for some reason, the above head movements, he's just behind me, and I don't know why, because he's ahead of me in everything else except that. So, either I'm abnormally strong at it, or he just really needs to work at it. I think it's mostly he's just not that good at it, because I don't think I'm like, extra special strong with pull downs by any means. So,
right.
But that's just enough. Those are just examples. And I'm sure any of you who've been at the gym like for any length of time and trained with different partners, everyone's got that one lift they're just really good at, or a couple lifts they're really good at, and a couple lifts that just kill you, that you're just not that good at. There's also weird things like nerve conductance. Like if you've ever blown out a shoulder or had a problem, you might have trouble getting a muscle to fire at its full capacity, weird things like that. But beyond that, there's definitely genetic variations we all have that will change how strong we can possibly get in certain lifts. That doesn't mean the muscle won't grow. It just means compared to another guy compared to another guy of similar size, you just may not gain as quickly as he does in a particular lift. And I wouldn't get discouraged about it just because that's how it works. And almost guaranteed there'll be some other lift you're better at, just because of the whatever makes him whatever shape he has that makes him better at that lift almost will always make him worse at some other lift. So.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's like short guys are going to be able to lift a lot more.
Than
taller guys.
Yeah, in certain lifts, it's all about the levers too. If you have less distance to push a particular weight, you're always going to be, well, theoretically, you can be stronger with that weight because you're pushing it at less of a distance. So, for instance, powerlifting, typically a guy who is a really good squatter in powerlifting is a bad deadlifter, and guys who are good at deadlift typically have longer arms, so the deadlift itself isn't as difficult to get off the ground, and they don't have to pull it as far because their arms are longer. But if you have short, stubby arms, that means you got to bend down further to get the weight, and you have to stand up, like you have to move the weight even further by the time you've stood all the way up because your arms are shorter. So the entire lift is like significantly harder, and it's blatantly obvious at a powerlifting meet who's a good deadlifter and who's a good squatter. So typically, if you're good at squatting and bench pressing, you're bad at deadlifting. And if you're good at deadlifting, you're not that good at bench pressing. Because if you're good at deadlifting, that probably means you have long arms. That means your bench press is a longer movement. So now we're splitting hairs, but what I'm saying is when you look at the numbers of like really, really competitive guys and you look at across the board, they'll be similar, and every now and then you'll see a guy who has an exceptionally good deadlift, but then he has a really crappy bench press, and you're like, what the hell? And then that's because he's shaped so much better for the deadlift than the bench press. And vice versa, guys who have like just bench presses that are off the charts are terrible at deadlift. Not all of them, but every now and then you'll see that happen, and then you just look at him and you're like, oh, that's because he's got like little T-Rex arms. Like his bench press is just this tiny little push, but the deadlift, it's like he's lifting the thing up a flight of stairs.
Yeah, well, to bring it into kind of real world for people as far as Olympic stuff. I mean, like you take Michael Phelps, who's good at freestyle. He's good at all his swims, just because he's good. I mean, he's just a good swimmer overall, and his body shape and his training and stuff. But you know, breaststroke is by far his worst stroke, and every time he does an individual medley or whatever, you'll notice that everybody. I'm not gonna say they necessarily catch up, but. They definitely keep pace with him on that particular swim where he's blowing everybody out and the other ones. And that particular leg of the swim, people are either catching up or some guys are catching up because that's their stroke. And, it's really weird. I found that, you know, back in the day that, typically guys that are good breaststrokers aren't as good in the other strokes, like the longer strokes, like fly and, you know, the ones that are just more linear, like backstroke and freestyle and fly. You know, it's almost like back and forth. So, I mean, that makes sense. You know?
Yep. So, I mean, I guess the bottom line is there's multiple variables that are going to dictate how, like, when you get really specific with the final little bits of dividing out how much you can lift compared to another guy who's of the similar size as you and who's been training as long as you. But now we're splitting hairs between two of the strongest guys in the gym, and why is one guy just a few pounds stronger than another? So
right.
when you're at your kind of ideal shoulder size, you're going to be one of the strongest people in the gym anyways for your size. So, you're just going to, as a blanket statement, you're going to be really strong when you're at your ideal size.
Yeah. I mean, when you get people to, your average guy spotting you in the gym that's going to come over is going to make a comment. Based on what you're putting up, or you know, you grab any. I don't care what anybody says. Anytime you grab hundreds, people look.
Yeah, exactly. When you're lifting like in the 70 to like 120 pound range of the dumbbell rack, you're one of the strongest guys in the gym. No matter how tall you are, or how old you are, that's just not too many guys lift up there. And once you're up in that range, as far as I'm concerned. I don't really care how tall you are. That's more or less the range you're going to be in when you're – for your major upper body lifts when you're close to your Adonis ratio, your ideal shoulder size anyways. And same with your arms. Like you'll be curling – you know, that you'll be one of the stronger guys at curls, and you'll be one of the stronger guys at all the different tricep lifts too. So, and that's just – I mean – there's not really much else to be said about it. You're going to be in that range. Like exactly how much you lift, I can't really tell you, but it, there's nobody that I can think of who will be in their, close to their ideal Donna's shoulders, but still only using, you know, 16, 60, 50, 60, 70 pound dumbbells for any of the major upper body lifts. That just won't happen.
Right. You know, it's really funny kind of even thinking about it. Even my biceps are I would say they're my weakest, and we've talked about this before, but even today, you know, I was doing the incline bicep curls or whatever. I mean, I was still doing 50s for like five or six or whatever. So, I mean, that's still pretty significant compared to, you know, most of the other guys that are even in there. And that's what I consider my weakest lift by a long shot. You know, correlate that to something like, you know, Tate presses or whatever, where I think I'm doing like 60s or 65s. You know, it's weird. I mean, yeah, it's definitely strong. It's different, you know. And the other funny thing about it too is that, you know, you're using these weights for a bigger weight, you're using them in the same rep range that everybody else is using super lightweight. Like I see this all the time. You see a guy, you know, pick up 30s or whatever and, you know, jump on chest press or something like that, incline chest press, and he'll rack out 8, and he's still got gas in the tank. He's still got a lot of gas in the tank, I can tell, but he'll put them down and, you know, he'll sit there and he'll pick them back up and do it again.
Well, a lot of people don't train with a program outlined. They just kind of go to the gym and they either read something in a magazine or doing what their buddy's doing, and they don't really know why they're doing it. They don't. I'm not even sure they have much of an expectation of what they think will happen. So most guys are just sort of going through motions. Even guys who are like former varsity athletes and stuff who actually had some pretty well designed programs, they really aren't really sure what they're doing. They just, you know, they want to build up a sweat. They kind of just want to work out. See, this is something that the team used to say, the powerlifting team, and I kind of like it. They're like, most guys go to the gym to work out. He's like, we go to train. And it's because they have a goal. They have an outlined program. Just the same as the Adonis program. It's like you're training. There's a reason why there's the number of reps there are, the number, the sets, the rest. Like the whole thing is meant to be done exactly how it's laid out. There's like, if you're just going to the gym and just kind of want to build up your heart rate, work up a sweat, then that's working out, and that's fine, but that's not actually training for a goal. So I guess I like that distinction, like workout versus training.
Yeah. You know what's strange? Kind of shift gears really quickly. And I was thinking about this in the shower a while ago. I understand like thermodynamics and stuff like that, but how much, like if I lift more than you, like how much would that correlate into calorie burn? Or is a lot of that have to do with, obviously mechanics and things like that, but let's say
more than me or more than yourself previously?
Well, let's say more than myself previously, I guess you could say. I mean, if I'm going, you know, I don't know, 135 on a bench or whatever, and I've got my form is the way it's supposed to be, and then I bump up to, you know, 175 for the same rep range.
Oh, energetically, you might cost a bit more energy, but not, well, I mean, it does cost a bit more energy, but nothing that's going to correlate into burning any more calories. Like, it's not going to translate into you getting leaner just because you're lifting heavier.
Right. So it's not anything really significant.
It's a drop in the bucket. It's still, now if you did hundreds more reps, even at the same light weight, then yeah, you've done like that much more exercise. But if, like lifting 100 pounds 10 times and then lifting 130 pounds 10 times is not going to translate into like anything you could ever see as like more fat burning or anything like that.
Right. I guess my real question would be, as the muscle gets stronger, does it get more efficient in using energy as well?
Oh yeah, that's part of the strength gain. That's why muscle growth correlated to strength gain isn't necessarily linear. So you get stronger, but that just doesn't mean the muscle's bigger and bigger and bigger because it's actually becoming more efficient. So you're still going to squeeze growth out of the muscle, but the gain, it's the law of diminishing returns. Otherwise we'd all just, like you know, I've been training for 15 years. How come I'm just not 15 years bigger than I was 15 years ago? Like how come I'm not just 350 pounds of pure muscle? Like any guy who's been training that long. It's because it becomes more and more efficient, and there's just a genetic cap to how big muscles can get anyways until they just rip right off the bone. So, it still does force the muscle to grow, but not at a accelerated rate the way it does when you first start training and when you're young and when you're in your late teens, early 20s.
Ooh, I just thought of this. This is really interesting because I was reading something up on this about a month or two ago. And you would probably know a lot about this considering it's kind of has to do with powerlifting and stuff. But, when people have like these adrenaline rushes or whatever and they're able to lift insane amount of weight or whatever, things are almost miraculous. I think I was reading something that says basically maybe, and obviously you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, but says your body has some type of maybe safety mechanism that only lets your muscle fire off at a certain rate, almost like a governor.
Yeah, there is. It's on your tendons. It's called the Golgi tendon organ. It's like a receptor on your tendons that can tell how much pressures or tensions being put on the tendon, and it'll dampen down the nervous signal to the muscle to make sure it doesn't rip itself off the bone. So I guess what you could say is there is enough force generating capacity in your muscles that if given no checks and balances and given enough, I guess, adrenaline and drugs, you could actually just contract that muscle so hard that it would just rip itself off the bone. Or if the tendon doesn't give, it could shatter the bone, crack the bone in half. So if the tendon itself doesn't give, the bone could give. So the quote governor that you said, it does exist. It's a receptor on your tendon, and it stops the muscle from tearing itself. But guys that use a lot of steroids can override that through literally just determination, willpower, and the muscle growing so fast compared to the ability of the tendon. See, tendons grow too. They get thicker. They get more durable. They just don't grow as quickly as muscle can grow. And when you use drugs, your muscles grow like super fast, but the tendon doesn't necessarily catch up to it. And those guys routinely rip muscles right in half, rip them right off bones and stuff.
Yeah, I think I was seeing somewhere a guy, like his quad just rolled up his leg.
Yeah, there's a really gross video of a guy who's doing a squat. It's just some insane amount of weight. And his one quad rips right at the knee in the middle of a squat. And so obviously all of that weight gets transferred to the other quad. And then that one immediately rips. So he ripped both of them. It's disgusting. Oh, it's disgusting. So normally normal guys who aren't using drugs can't do that. Like you just usually cannot produce enough force to ever rip a muscle. But if you use enough drugs, you can potentially do that just because the muscle's growing so fast and the tendon's not keeping up with its durability and strength related to the muscle it's attached to. Every now and then a guy he'll be going nuts in the gym. He'll just be lifting his, some ridiculous amount of weight and then rip, just tear a muscle right in half.
In sports, isn't that kind of a telltale sign? Like people start having funny rips and tears and tendon flare-ups or whatever. I mean, would that be a telltale sign of some type of use?
Of drugs? Well, it's kind of weird to be like, yeah, I went to the gym, I was lifting weights and ripping muscle right in half. Let's be like, well, most people can't do that. So, the most telltale signs is looks. You can just see when a guy's just abnormally large, you can kind of tell. But yeah, guys that are strong enough to be doing that kind of damage just by lifting weights without it being like an awkward hit or something like that. Like I had a buddy rip a bicep tendon when he was moving a heavy piece of furniture and he kind of lost his balance and shifted real awkward. Now, and his arm was in an extended, it was a really awkward position. Now in that case, like I know he doesn't use any drugs and it makes sense why it ripped, but in the gym when you're not in awkward positions but you're definitely in control of where your arms are and your legs and your whole body or whatever, it's kind of obvious when you rip a muscle just from doing that that muscle probably isn't strong enough to just rip itself from the bone.
Man, how bad would that hurt?
Probably wouldn't feel good.
I wouldn't know. Are we talking like excruciating, like want to die pain or?
I don't know. I know. Well, it depends where the tear is, I guess. Like I know.
I mean, like if you ripped your quad off.
Oh, that probably hurts like hell. Like, I can't see how that wouldn't hurt. And the inflammation and swelling would just be immense, right?
Right.
Like, think about when you just twist an ankle. Could you imagine ripping an entire quadricep muscle right from the leg? Like, that must just be gross. Like, it probably hurts a lot.
I mean, what would be the rehabilitation time for that? I mean, because then they got to go in and
they have to do some pretty invasive surgery. Go in, get the tendon, get the loose tendon that ripped. And remember, quad isn't one muscle; it's four.
Right.
Even though they all kind of come down to a couple of common tendons, it's that, you know, who knows if the rip's clean right across or if it's kind of a frayed, messy rip. So they'd have to go in and literally patch it all up and, you know, nail it back down to the bone more or less. And then from there, the tendon and bone will regrow all onto itself. But the rehab would take a while.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty much out of commission for, I don't know, a year maybe.
Yeah, you'd be out of commission for a little while anyways.
Man.
And you definitely wouldn't be you'd be scared to death to be squatting under any kind of weight at all. Like, you'd probably be scared to get out of a chair.
Yeah, I probably would. Something like that happened to me, I don't think I'd do any leg workouts ever again.
Well, my buddy who tore his bicep tendon, he tore it right across at the elbow. And normally, 90% of bicep tears happen up in the shoulder, but his happened down at the elbow. And his rehab, his therapist was saying that within 3 months, 3 to 4 months, he should be back to full strength. But it normally takes guys up to 9 months to actually rehab it because they're so scared to do a bicep curl. Like, they don't want to lift anything because he's just picturing it ripping again. So it's more of a coming over the mental barrier of being comfortable with lifting weight again and being confident that it's not going to tear.
Yeah, I mean, well, you hear that in sports all the time too, where a guy's 100% rehabbed or whatever, but he's not moving the way he was. And
well, yeah, like after a torn ACL, I mean, you remember how bad it was, and then it's so scary to go back.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, man.
So yeah, but once you overcome that barrier, it's everything. I mean, I guess the bottom line is all of those different tissues can repair and rehab back to basically 100%. Like unless it's really bad, almost any of those type of injuries, the orthopedic surgeons and rehab specialists are good enough nowadays that most things can come back to like 100% or you know 90-95, like high enough that you wouldn't really notice it was any different.
Right.
Like maybe an Olympic sprinter might have lost a couple tenths of a second, but he's still an Olympic caliber sprinter. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's pretty crazy, man. So, if you got anything else? We covered a lot, man.
No, that's pretty good. So I guess the bottom line is, you know, if you're following the program, we can't give you specific numbers on your size, but what we can, I mean, you've heard our numbers, so that's at least an idea, a rough ballpark figure. And I don't really care how tall you are. You're probably going to be close to the type of strength we've mentioned when you're at your ideal shoulder size. So you're going to be – when you're at that size, I mean, I'd be shocked if you're not one of the stronger guys in the gym when you're actually approaching your ideal size.
Yeah, definitely. And that's starting at height. I mean, that's not just having the golden ratio. That's actually starting at height, going down the waist, and then going up the shoulders to having the ideal shoulder size. So, yeah, because we get a lot of guys saying, well, I've got my AI, but, you know, they're 6 foot tall with a, you know, 28-inch waist and, you know, 47-inch shoulders or whatever it is instead of the 52, you know.
We're actually talking about having the right shoulder size for your height.
Yeah. Right. So, well, there you go, guys. I mean, I hope this helped you out. Got another one coming to you next Monday, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. That's a good one.